There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
It's On the Couch with me, Sally Moussa, and Sabine Scaff, clinical psychologist at the Human Relations Institute and Clinics. Hello and welcome.
Hi, Sally. How are you?
Great to have you back, Sabine.
Good to be here.
Now, Sabine, there are so many topics that inspire us on the show, but this one really had us. Producer Joe found this letter, and it's an anonymous letter from a woman who's written into The Guardian, and she's reflecting on her life. She writes, "You had no idea how beautiful you were in your youth. Not the dishonest beauty of glossy magazine covers, but the inherent beauty and the promise of the life ahead of you. What did you do with that person who had so much to offer the world? You hid her behind the security blanket of convention and expectation. You allowed life to steer you around the course, and you excused yourself by saying you were to this or to that. Was it arrogance or reticence that led you to this grey world that you now inhabit? Did you really believe that there was a plan for you? You waited for life to come to you. You thought that you were being adventurous by volunteering in India, by climbing mountains in Nepal, by travelling alone through Southeast Asia. Let me tell you, it was a token effort. You were so caught up in yourself and the thought of what you could do to make an impact on the world that you barely crossed your mind. You got back from your travels and you took a job, just like that. You didn't think of searching for your passions. You didn't think about your contributions to the world. You didn't think about how you would spend this precious life of yours. You didn't think at all. You found a boyfriend. You married him. You bought a flat. You had babies. You worked hard and you patted yourself on the back and told yourself that that was success. You allowed the treadmill to carry you along and you slumped into a comfortable life. You didn't make a plan for yourself. You wasted your intelligence, your education, your stable family background, and you let life happen to you and you didn't take control. Did you think that the world owed it to you to make life interesting? Did you really think that you were special? The arrogance and naivety were equally balanced. Now you look at others, those brave, adventurous, engaged, passionate, resilient people who were once your peers, and you are inspired, humbled, and feel so terribly inadequate. You built a house around yourself and filled it with the comfortable and conventional, and now you're wondering if there's a key to get out. If there is, it's unlikely you'll get to it soon because you have responsibilities, the children, the husband, and the home that you wanted so much. Your husband's career has taken off. Once you were equal. Your own career became just a job as you took on the responsibility of children. You prided yourself on keeping career and family going, but you haven't actually. Your career has ground to a slow and mind-numbing trudge. You've made the lives of your children and the husband as perfect as possible, and this is what you wanted. You are happy with that, but in doing so, you disappeared into grey. Now, at 40-something, you have so many ideas about things you'd like to do. There is yearning for a life not fully lived, a potential not realized. You look at your beautiful children and see the promise in life ahead of them. And you mourn a life wasted. You have tied yourself up in the conventional life when you could have gone out into the world. People will humor you when you sign up for a new course or take on a new hobby. For what can a 40-something working mother of three really offer? You have homework to supervise, dinner to cook, socks to wash, a conference call to prepare for. It's too late now to be the person you should have been. You have nobody to blame but yourself." That's the letter that she wrote into The Guardian. I mean, what's interesting about this is it's a lot of us. This is actually
absolutely
a lot of us. Do you see a lot of people coming to you, Sabine, with a similar story?
Absolutely. It's such a powerful genuinely written, beautifully written letter. And when Joe sent it to me, I had goosebumps as I was reading it. And it's so relatable, not only because I'm the same age as Anonymous with similar struggles, but also because most of the people who come to therapy are facing similar struggles in their own lives. Actually, most people who come to therapy, most clients, are in that age range, in that period of their lives that we call midlife crisis, where everything is being questioned, all the decisions, their values, the lifestyle. So it's quite a stressful time in their lives. So, I mean, this letter is very relatable on so many levels.
What happens to us? Why is it that we get to that point? I mean, there surely must have been many markers in our lives that we could have stopped and made a different decision. But then we kind of get to our 40s and we might have that moment in the bathroom where we just break down and think, is this absolutely really where I want to be?
You know, I think this moment is inevitable because we go through life in stages. You know, so this is a developmental stage where we need to stop and assess how our life decisions that we made in our 20s have affected us. Is it our plans going the way that we wanted them to go? What is it that I can do better? I mean, whether you're married or single, whether you are a man or a woman, whether you have a career or small-time jobs, it does not matter. This is the age where it's time to question what's going to happen the next 40, 50 years of your life. It's an inevitable stage. We call it midlife crisis. I don't like so much the word crisis. It's not a crisis. You're not alone. It's more of something that you have to go through. It's like an upgrade. Think of it as an upgrade, like you upgrade the software of your phone. So it's a good time to upgrade and take your life in a direction that is more meaningful to you.
Time to take stock.
Yes.
We are going to be talking about regrets. What are your biggest regrets? Tell us some of your regrets in your life. And we're going to be talking about some of the ones that we've come across ourselves. I'm going to be sharing some of mine as well.
Having had a problem with drugs and alcohol 25 years ago.
Maybe not paying attention, more attention when I was younger.
Not having a larger family.
I can't say I have any regrets.
That my mother didn't live long enough for me to take her to Paris.
Probably not having spent more time with my parents, but they weren't here.
Being frightened of so many things when I was younger.
Saying no to things has a ripple effect in my life.
That I didn't get sober sooner.
For not knowing when I was younger what I know now.
Trusting people too much and too long when they've let me down a few times.
I regret my career choices early in life.
Not having finished a novel at this point.
I regret not joining the Peace Corps when I graduated from college.
Not having followed my dream to be an entertainer when I was younger.
I do regret that I didn't think I'd be a good parent.
I needed to be in a position where I had to file for divorce because I think that affected my daughter greatly. I think that was the only choice I had, but somehow I wish that could have been different.
That I would have known when I was younger what I know now.
That I didn't do all the things that I wanted to do, like go into acting much earlier.
What are the things that you regret most in life? These are just some of the voices sharing what they regret the most in their lives. We're speaking to Sabine Scaff, clinical psychologist at the Human Relations Institute and Clinics. You could see a whole variety of issues. We're going to be looking at different ages as we go through the show, throughout the show. The ones that we were listening to now, they were in the age group of 55 to 75. So it changes a lot. What's really interesting, obviously, is that it changes a lot.
Yes.
The things that you regret between childhood all the way into old age.
Absolutely, because, you know, if we look at the pyramid of needs of Abraham Maslow, I mean, our needs are different at different developmental stages. At this age group, I mean, between 55 and 75, it's the last stage. I mean, this is the stage where we just have to enjoy and be at peace with any kind of decision that we have done or that we have made. There's not much to change. It's not to say that there isn't anything to be done in terms of repair or correction, but this is the last stage. This is where, I don't know, I think it's time to just let things be, you know? We have this maturity at this age, and it's no longer the struggle and the stamina that we have when we're in our 30s, in our 40s, where we feel we can still change things. So regret is more profound at that age, that's for sure.
And in terms of when you do regret something, there are some things that stick with you for years, and you just kind of, every time it comes back to you in your thoughts or in your memory, you just, you're consciously or just kicking yourself and just kind of thinking, if only.
Yes, if only. But you see, there kind of is no point, because at that time when you made that decision, you made that decision in the best possible way that you could at that time. Of course, you couldn't possibly have known better. This is one of the biggest regrets, is if I had known, I would have done it differently. How could you have known? I mean, life takes you, even when you have a 5-year plan and when you have 10-year plan, people in their 20s have 5-year plans. I don't know how they do that. I really admire them. And 10-year plans, you know, they figured it out. They know exactly what time, you know, things will happen and at what stage. But it does not happen this way. I mean, people do what they can with what they have at that moment. And we need to be kind to ourselves and say, you know, even if I made that decision, that was the best possible decision at that time. And it's okay.
And to not beat yourself up about it. We'll talk more in just a moment about regret and how to deal with it and how to get over it. A question that's come in for you, Sabine, asking, good afternoon. My best friend has been suffering from insomnia for the last 8 years. She takes prescribed sleeping pills, but it seems she's immune to them. And even with exceeding the prescribed amount, she can only sleep now for a maximum of 4 shallow hours of sleep. Is it true that insomnia is untreatable and the lack of sleep is definitely affecting her life? And she's changed over the years. She's become obsessed with her condition because she can't yet change it. Is there a cure for something like this?
Well, insomnia is one symptom of a larger syndrome, if you want, you know. It's never, no one comes in just because they're lacking sleep. There's also, there's usually underlying different difficulties as well, such as depression, anxiety, and so on. I think the first step is for this person to try and understand what part, I mean, is it underlying depression? It could be chronic depression, long-term depression that has gone unnoticed or undiagnosed. Just taking sleeping pills can become highly addictive over time, and then people get used to it and it loses its effect, its pharmaceutical effect. That's why I don't think looking at the sleep deprivation as it's an isolated symptom is very helpful. So we need to look at it as part of something bigger. Medication alone is not helpful. You have to go into therapy. You have to try alternative things. Not that therapy is alternative. I mean, according to the World Health Organization, the best practice for any kind of psychological disorder is psychotherapy plus psychiatric medication.
I hope that helps you there. Very difficult condition indeed. We're discussing regret today. What are those things that you regret in your life? Or maybe you don't have any regrets. Do you live a life free of them? But if you could write a letter to your younger self, what would you say? Before we get into that with Sabine Scaff, clinical psychologist at the Human Relations Institute and Clinics. Sabine, we've had a text come in saying, great show. I'm a mum of three girls aged 11 years, 8 years and 18 months. We moved here from London 10 years ago and my role has been just mummy since moving. My husband puts me down in front of the girls, but I used to be a corporate lawyer in London, high-flying and full-time career that I enjoyed. And for the past 2 or 3 months, I felt the resentment towards my husband and frustrated to where my life is going. But I love my children and know that this is a small window of my life where I will be able to spend time with them.
This sounds so familiar. Again, I mean, this is typical of what I hear in sessions with clients. We have a support group in HRIC. It's called Expat Wife, Expat Life. And all the women who joined reported similar struggles as this lady has written. It's very common. I mean, us women, what we do like better than anyone else is losing touch with ourselves for in the name of motherhood, in the name of being someone's wife. So we give up so much of ourselves. Not that anyone has asked us, but we feel that this is what we should do to be a good mother, to be a good wife. We change our belief systems, our values to coincide with how our husbands, thinks and feels about things. So it's very common to lose touch of the person that you were before you became someone's wife, before you became even someone's mother. And one of the greatest difficulty that we find is to integrate all these parts into one. And this is what midlife crisis allows us to do, basically, this time when we question everything that we've accomplished so far. But this is very common, especially in expat wives.
It's very difficult, though, because that's how we're conditioned in most cultures.
Yes.
That once you get married, you have kids, that's your role. That's
absolutely.
It.
There's a very good book that was written in the 60s or 70s, I'm not sure. It's called The Cinderella Complex. So it's basically a sociological research, psychosocial research, that was done on women who go to universities, get a higher education, they have amazing degrees, masters, PhDs, and so on. They never use them because society expects them to get married and have children and be someone's wife. You know, this is how we define ourselves. This is how we are taught to define ourselves in so many parts of the world, not just in a specific culture or a specific a religious background or nationality.
But
I mean,
as they say, though, something's got to give.
Yes,
and
we
usually
cannot do it all.
Usually, it's the the
your
wife
mental health.
Or the mum, and her mental health. Yeah,
yes, absolutely.
How do we stop that from happening?
We are under the illusion that we are super women, and we thrive to reach that ideal of ourselves when we're actually very human. You know, we cannot be super moms. Absolutely, something's gotta give. And most of the time, women come in because they have spread themselves too thin. They can no longer cope with the demands that they have placed on themselves, because we want to always compare and see and make sure that we are on top of our game when it comes to motherhood, activities, getting things done. Everything has to look perfect. It's like that picture in the IKEA catalog, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
That happy family, everyone's happy, when we know on a day-to-day basis that there are so many little struggles.
If only it was the IKEA catalog now. It's social media as well.
Absolutely.
Where, you know, we're comparing ourselves to our peers, particularly, it's interesting. If you keep in touch with those friends from school over Facebook or Instagram or whatever it is, and then you see that they're traveling and they're enjoying life and they're looking fit and fabulous and healthy, and they've got three kids and they're running a business empire and whatever it is, it just makes you stop and just think, oh,
what's happening?
What
may
you know,
I
where
just
did I go
comment
wrong?
On that?
Yeah.
Okay, so Have you ever seen anyone post a picture of themselves being unhappy?
Very, very rarely.
No. Absolutely. My 12-year-old just told me the other day, because she's now started going on social media, "Mom, do you know that there's a whole crew behind these people that make them look so great?" And I said, "Of course." She said, "I thought that this is what these fashionistas do on their own." And I said, "No, there's a whole crew behind them to make them look the way that they do." Mm. And I mean, it's virtual reality. It's not real.
Mm.
What we see is not real.
It can be really difficult, though. Even though you might know that, you will still, in the back of your mind, though, compare yourself,
of course,
you know, to your friends and to those who are posting those pictures at the latest party or whatever it is, and just think,
yes, but different people
that could have been
different.
Me, and you have a crying baby in your lap who's screaming at the top of their lungs at 3 a.m.
What you're saying is very important, because it could be you a few years when your child is a bit older. Do you understand? So we compare ourselves at that moment in time.
Yeah.
When you have a crying child, your attention needs to be there. But then your child grows and your responsibilities change, and you may have time to have the social life that you see now as your baby's crying later on.
It's perspective.
Yes, absolutely.
Putting things into perspective. Another interesting text that's come in saying, my first thought was, I regret not being more proactive about learning Arabic during the many years that I've been here. And then I thought, I regret not having more children. That's interesting. But as I reflect on these regrets, it's caused me to think about the other achievements I've made, and to also think about ways I can appreciate my time with my children now. So I guess I don't have anything I truly regret. Each time I look back, I think, if I had done that, I would not be in the place where I am now, and where I am today is a really good place.
This is such a good perspective, like positive outlook on life. You know, we have these bucket lists that we, you know, I'm going to do this, I'm going to climb the Himalayas, the Kilimanjaro, and so on. And by that time, we also put these dreams into time-bound stereotypes and so on. But there's also the list of things that we have actually achieved that we never look at. You know, we're only looking at what's lacking, you know, when we think and we feel regret. We never look at the things that we have achieved and the decisions that led us to things that make us happy today.
Mm.
It's always focused on the negative rather than the positive. But this is a good example of how you can rationalize, you know, any type of regret that you might have. Yes, there are things that you haven't done, but there are so many more things that you have actually done. Why don't we take a look at that?
Do men and women experience regret differently?
I wouldn't say differently. I would say that they regret different things, you know, because even at the starting point of a young adult's life, I mean, they have different goals. Men seem to be more, they target more performance and achievement. They seem to be more career oriented. This is not to generalize, but this is from what we see, and women focus more on relationship. They measure their success in terms of, am I a good mother? Am I a good wife? Do I have a lot of friends? How's my social life doing? And so on. So they look more at connection than achievement.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting because looking at studies on gender differences and regret, you've got an increased value that women put on relationships, as you said, and how women have more difficulty disengaging attention from past relationships. So we often beat ourselves up about those past relationships. Overall, 44% of women surveyed had romantic regrets versus just 19% of men. They're not too fussed about it.
Wow, there's so much to comment on that. I mean, it's again a different perception of what is important for you at this stage of your life. Yes, women tend to romanticize things more than men. Absolutely. And past regrets, yes, are always related to past relationships. but regret, I think, is still experienced in it impacts you the same, whether you're a man or a woman, depending on the things that you had wished for.
Mm. Text coming in, 4001, and on the app, on the topic of regret. Tell us, what are your biggest regrets? And if you could write a letter to your younger self, what would you say about your experience as you know it now compared to back in your 20s, back in your teens? We'd love to know from you, 4001 or on the app. We've got Sabine Scaff with us, clinical psychologist at the Human Relations Institute and Clinics. And of course, you can ask her any question around a number of topics, including depression, anxiety, relationships, life decisions. We do have a caller on the line. Arsa, hello. Welcome.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks. You want to add to the topic? We're talking regrets today.
Yes, actually, first of all, I really love the topic, and I always tune into your show, so I really enjoy listening to you. And every day I pick up my son at this time, so I tune in real quick, so I props to you for doing a great job.
Oh, thank you so much. We're so glad you're enjoying the show. But tell us about your experience.
Actually, the thing I wanted to say was I'm married, and I have two kids. My husband is really, you know, amazing. I have a great relationship. I'm the type of woman that has a nice social life, a good house, you know, happy children, happy life type of thing from far. But I don't know why I feel there's like a void in life, you know? I feel like maybe there's something that is keeping me from afar. Everyone looks at me, they're like, oh, she has a good social life. She's always traveling. Her kids are, you know, well-mannered. Her husband is perfect. But there's this space, you know what I mean? It's kind of hard to explain, like, that I feel like it's making me sad or depressed or something, but I don't know what it is. Maybe it's a regret that I didn't do something in life. Maybe I feel underachieved. So I don't know. How do you figure out what's missing, basically?
Sabine, what's your advice for Arsa? I think this is a common thing, isn't it?
Yes, very, very common. Arsa, this is so brave of you to call us and let us know about this. You know, most of the clients that walk in our clinic and go into therapy, the first thing that they report is that feeling of emptiness. And often they don't even know how to name it. And you just called it void. So you're very perceptive and aware of your inner world. And that this is really amazing. I mean, you sound very young as well.
Yeah, I am actually. I'm very young. And I got married early. And I have two kids really early in my life. So I feel like everyone might. I'm 26. So everyone around me, they're either, you know, working, they're really ahead in life, and I'm here with two kids. I'm just like, okay, what have I done with my life, you know? Even though I'm blessed, obviously, there are people that can't have children, I know that. Mm. But I feel like there's something that I feel like I haven't done fully.
Yes.
So I just wanted to get that out.
This is very, very common. You know, we spoke about how women define themselves through motherhood and through their relationships and how this is very important to them because this is how we are conditioned. But you're still very young, and I'm sure you've done some education, and I'm sure you have a degree and something that you can invest in. It's never too late to start. I mean, it's very common for young women to give up their careers, to stay with their children until the age of their schooling. We've all done it. We've all had either stopped or had part-time jobs in order to pay attention to motherhood. The early years of childhood, it's very important for us to be there. But once they become more independent, more autonomous, it's very common also for mothers to go back into the working force, maybe not full-time, maybe part-time, or even do something that satisfies them, not as mothers, but as individuals. We spoke about how we lose touch with ourselves, you know, doing all these tasks. It's like we are put on a cruising speed and we're supposed to reach stage after stage. It seems that you have done that. And maybe now it's time to stop and think how you can contribute to also your self-growth. You know, you're very self-aware. And that void, it's very common to experience if you feel that you've achieved your targets that you have put for yourself. And now it's time to really think about what you want, not as a wife, not as a mother, but as you. Does it make sense?
Yeah. I mean, I understand what you're trying to say, but how do you know what you want, you know? How do I know? That's the thing for me. Like, I don't know. It's kind of hard to explain, I guess. But, you know, you never know what you really want to do next for yourself.
But that in itself is important, because you are becoming aware and you're questioning. There's no right answer for you. There's no plan. There's no manual that tells you, okay, when you're 28, you have two kids. This is 1, 2, 3. This is what you should do to stop feeling the void. The void in itself that you're experiencing is a warning sign. It's like a red flag. So I think you should further explore it. Where is it coming from? At what times of the day or the week do you experience that void? You know, it's important to also explore these avenues.
Arsa, how old are your children?
They're actually very young. My son is 3 and my daughter is 1.
Wow.
So I personally choose to be with them 24 hours. You know, I mean, obviously I can rely on a nanny, etc. But obviously, yeah, they're really young, so I feel like I would be a better caretaker.
Yeah.
At this point in life.
Absolutely.
That's just my personal choice. I mean, I'm not saying that. Yeah,
that's what a lot of us think, and I definitely made the same commitment to be there with my girls, and I know that took a good decade I spent with them, you know, just being their single caretaker.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's, as Sabine said, it's a really good opportunity for you to step back and think, well, what did I love to do before I was a mum? What was I really passionate about? And to reconnect with that and to think, well, actually, maybe, you know, it would be great to take a class or to do something like that, or, you know, to meet people in a club of, you know, I don't know, artists or something, whatever it is that you're interested in. That could be an interesting way to explore what you want to do. Yeah. I hope that helps, Arsa.
No, thanks a lot. I really, you know, the thing is, you just need to push. You kind of know what you want.
Yes.
But you just need someone to just encourage you, motivate you, and just push you further to it. And I mean, thanks a lot for this. I guess that was the push I kind of needed from, you know, an outside perspective, a professional perspective, I suppose.
You can do it, Arsa.
I really appreciate it.
We believe in you. We
Thank
believe
you so
in
much,
you.
And
amazing. Well done. Well done.
Could you let me know more about the speaker as well? Maybe if you want to get in touch with her. Because,
absolutely. Will
is
do.
It on your website or something?
It is. Maybe. It's on the Dubai Today webpage. You can find all the information there on our blog, Dubai Today, on the DubaiEye1038.com website. Thanks so much, Arsa. We appreciate the call. Welcome back to the second hour of Dubai Today. We're asking you about your biggest regrets in life. If you could write a letter to your younger self, what would you say? Have you spent your life in one direction and maybe woken up years later thinking, this should be so different? Sabine Scaff, clinical psychologist at the Human Relations Institute and Clinics, is with us to discuss this and why so many of us fall into that trap and why women more than men are likely to feel this way. That's what we're talking about today. It is regrets. What are the things that you regret in your life? If you could write your younger self a letter, what would you say in that letter? Are there things that really stick out in your mind that you think, I should have done that differently? I wish that was different. I have to be honest, if I'm going to share mine, for me, for my dad, who I loved so much, and he loved us, and he was one of those, I know that men generally have this way of not often sharing their emotions. He was the opposite. He was affectionate, he was loving, he would say it, he would show it all the time with us, and it was just so beautiful. But he happened to die suddenly. He died very suddenly, and he passed away 2 months after my second daughter was born. So she was 2 months old, and I was, you know, caught up in her and taking care of her. And I remember one day I was in the kitchen, and it was the afternoon, and so Dad walks past and he says, "Oh, where's Mum?" And I said, "Oh, I don't know. I think she's upstairs." He said, "Oh, if you see her, just let her know that I just want some lunch." And that was it. I said, yeah, sure. And so I'd gone upstairs. We were packing. We were in Australia and packing to go back to Saudi, where we lived at the time after the birth of my daughter. So I was very busy and just thinking about lots of things. And it was just a couple of hours later that my mum found him and he had died. And so for me, that was a really difficult moment because I thought, there was no preparation.
Of course.
It's just, you know, there was no goodbyes. That they were literally the last words that I'd said to him. You know, sure, I'll let Mum know.
Sudden death is always one of the biggest losses that we experience in life because, as we said earlier, you know, there's no way that we can know what's going to happen next, even if we have plans and our plans look good on Excel sheets.
Yes.
You know, but yeah, I mean, loss of a loved one is one of the biggest, it's a life-changing event for everyone that is involved, and it takes, you know, going through the loss cycle, the grieving, the shock, the denial, and then finally acceptance, it takes many years to recover. And I can see that, you know, this has happened a long time ago, but
well, 7 years
it's
ago.
Still so, affected.
You know, when it's interesting because, you know, we were caught up in the beauty and the wonder of this new birth, you know, of my baby girl. And he loved her so much. Mm. He used to call her, you know, she's the flower of God. Like he was so utterly in love with her, and to lose him at the same time.
Yes. Have you ever heard of the saying, when it rains, it pours?
Yeah, exactly.
Life sends us so many challenges, happy and sad at the same time. And just to see if we can handle it. But at the end of the day, it only makes us stronger. It only makes us appreciate more the things that we have.
I think for us, because, you know, my family's Arab, so we're Iraqi, and we lived in Australia. So I think my dad really missed that connection with us in terms of the cultural connection that he could have and would have loved to have had. You know, we were much more Australian than maybe we were Arab. Mm. And I think it was difficult for him to connect with us on a deeper level, even though he used to, you know, we did connect and we loved each other. And so I think when, you know, when I got married to my husband, who is very Arab and very Jordanian, he found that connection with him. And so my husband, even, he really grieved. He grieves for my dad even as much as I do, you know, because he formed a connection with him. And sometimes it's like it's like that, you know, that intergenerational kind of shift when you move away from your mother tongue or from your culture. It can be difficult because you lose something with your parents.
And then you reconnect through the birth of beautiful grandchildren, right?
Yeah.
So there is so much to learn still at a later stage in life. You know, you can make amends and you can take things in a way that makes you more feel more whole, if you want.
Yes.
You know, I think that now is a good time to talk about my very interesting concept that I came across. It's a Japanese concept. It's called Ikigai. I'm not even sure if I'm saying it correctly. But basically what it says, Ikiru means to live and Gai means to having value. So basically living with purpose. And I think this is what the previous caller was talking about. You know, that void that you feel, the emptiness, is having purpose. Okay, what's my purpose in life? Why am I here? What's the meaning? Viktor Frankl wrote Man's Search for Meaning. We all need to have meaning in our lives to make it worthwhile. So this concept of Ikigai actually talks about four different questions. In order for us to attain that level of, you know, self-actualization, if you want, it's what do you love? What are you good at? What does the world need from you? And what can you get paid for? So basically, it's your passion, your mission, your vocation, and your profession. If all these four conditions pre-exist, like exist at this stage of your life, you have reached a level of purpose in your life.
I love that. That just encapsulates it so well.
Yes,
go through those again.
It's passion,
what
mission.
So what do you love?
The questions.
Yeah.
What do you love?
Mm-hmm.
What are you good at? What does the world need from you? And what can you get paid for? It's not so much about the value of the money. It's about what validates you, you know?
We get that advice a lot from the likes of people like Tony Robbins, don't we?
Yes.
Do what you love. Life You've coaches. Got to follow your passion.
Yes, and Tony Robbins talks so beautifully about this.
We'll talk more about that in just a moment. We're talking about regrets, those big regrets that you have in your life. And, you know, we as women, as mums, we let life happen to us. And what happens when we start feeling that void, as Sabine has been talking about and as Arsa called in earlier, what happens? How do we fill that void again? We aren't talking about big life regrets, things that have happened where you wish you had done it differently. Maybe it stayed with you. Maybe it is something where you feel like it's you haven't gotten over it just yet. And Sabine, there are some who feel like depression is something that comes with that as well. We'll be talking about that, but just to listen to a few voices as well. This is in the age group between 30 and 55 about what they regret.
Chances to speak up for other people or to stop people from getting bullied.
Not taking more advantage of my college experience.
Not trying out for as many sports as I could have in high school.
See, I have many regrets, but I am where I am because of them, so I wouldn't change anything.
Not having taken a gap year before going to college.
Not saying sorry more often.
That I didn't stick to dance classes when I was growing up because I love to dance, but I just missed out on a lot of technique.
No regrets.
I tried to live without regrets. I think everything that I've done has been for a purpose.
I regret not finishing college.
I don't regret anything. I don't believe in them.
Not following my dreams earlier in life.
Not saying the things that I really want to say.
Not staying single longer.
Being mean sometimes.
I wish I knew when I was younger how wonderful I was.
That I probably should have gone to Columbia University first.
I've kind of moved around a lot while my kids were little, and I sort of regret not being in maybe one or at least two solid places.
Not keeping in touch with people I probably should have kept in touch with.
What do I regret the most? My second marriage.
Having not appreciated and being young when I was younger.
Not going to Fort Lauderdale on spring break when I was in college.
Not giving my father more ice cream when he died, before he died.
Not listening to my self at times in life when I should have.
I don't have too many regrets.
Do you have any regret? Sabine, a lot of texts coming in. This one is rather interesting, actually, from Sarah, who says, I think regret and envy are linked. We envy other people and their successes, and then we regret not having the same success, something that we were talking about earlier. There was one that also came in as well, saying, I would write a letter to myself saying, look after yourself. Look after your physical being. I'm overweight. I have never exercised. I don't eat healthily, and I want to change that. But I know it will be a big struggle. And if I hadn't let myself get to this point, it wouldn't feel like such a steep hill to climb. Where do we start with this in terms of getting over it?
Wow, that's a tough question.
We've only got a couple of minutes before we have to go to the news. So okay. it will be something very quickly.
I think that regrets are there to remind us of our ability to do the things that we regret not doing. Mm. I think we can still achieve, if not all of it, at least some of it. I mean, thinking of regret and nostalgia and remorse and guilt in terms of all or nothing is not helpful. if we can do all of it the way we could have done it earlier in life, we can still do some of it, mm-hmm. whatever it is that we were hoping for or wishing for or thriving for. Yeah. I think this is it's a helpful way to look at regret.
Well, what would you say to your younger self, or other things that stick with you? We are going to be hearing from Shella next after the break, who has quite a story to tell, and we would love to hear yours as well. Don, thank you so much for your text. We'll get to that also after the break. We are with Sabine Scaff, clinical psychologist at the Human Relations Institute and Clinics. Coming back to our conversation with Sabine Scaff, clinical psychologist at the Human Relations Institute and Clinics, talking about those big regrets in life, those things that we wish we had done differently. We actually have Shella on the line. Hello, Shella.
Yes, hi, good afternoon.
Hi. You actually have quite an interesting story to tell in terms of things that you wish that you had done differently. Tell us your experience.
Well, I don't know if I call it interesting, but it was quite a bitter experience. Because I spent a lot of my life, many years, to study and work abroad. So 10 years ago, I decided to come back to Dubai to be closer to my mom, to be able to help her in the when she's a bit older, and to be able to do something for her. She always did everything in my life for me. She did everything, absolutely. She was my rock. She was everything for me. So when we came, she was suffering from back pain for years. And all the time she delayed the operation because of us, or because they said it's complicated. But generally she was very healthy. She didn't have any problem, just the back pain. So she decided to go ahead for surgery, and I was happy because I wanted to get her a bit fit so we can enjoy life now together, that I have more time and I have my little daughter. And but just a few weeks before the surgery, she said she doesn't want to do it because she feels a bit better. Maybe it just goes away by itself. I guess she was scared. So I encouraged her and I pushed her and said, don't worry, just go ahead and do it so you have your life back. You are like a disabled like this. Everything is okay with you. Just go ahead. So I pushed her and pushed her. Finally, she agreed. But then, unfortunately, 2 weeks after the surgery, she passed away, not because of the surgery. She had other complications, which nobody realized, and during the surgery actually raised. So it was so sudden for me. I couldn't even think that she had 1% of the chance that she died. So I could not forgive myself. I could not think that what I did. And I could not forgive myself for years. I hated myself, and then I was suffering from depression, and then I tried to heal myself, but it was too late. I was so deep in depression, and then I was diagnosed with fibromyalgia. So now, basically, after 10 years, I wake up every day with pain. I go to bed every day with pain. And for me, it's like that I have this pain to remind myself what I did. I still cannot get over it. Though everybody talked to me, and I had a lot of psychotherapy, that it wasn't my fault. But I honestly think it was my fault. If I didn't push her, she would be alive. Maybe for many years, who knows. I'm sorry, I cannot talk.
Sure. It's very, very difficult. Sabine?
Yes, it's a very heavy burden. Yeah. You know, the guilt that you are feeling and you are, expressing to us at this moment. And it seems that you've been holding on to this guilt for so many years, for such a long time, that it has kind of paralyzed you in your life, because you have been diagnosed with fibromyalgia, and fibromyalgia usually is a condition that you rule in, not out. So when you have done other medical exams and you've ruled so many things out, then you rule it in, and it's highly connected to depression, underlying depression. So it seems that you've been in therapy, that you've been on proper medication, you've talked about this, and you still have don't feel that this has healed. This deep regret, it's like having survivor's guilt when you're in a traumatic situation and then you're the only one that survives. There are no words to like off the top of, you know, very quickly off the top of my head to make you feel better. And I'm sure your friends have told you this before, that it's not your fault. And deep down inside, you know it's not your fault, but you just miss her so much. And it seems that you've had plans and you wanted to go ahead and live this kind of life that you had hoped for, finally, with her, to spend more time with her. And this has gone now. So I feel this is, I sense this is the regret that is being expressed now, the guilt, you know, that I could have had my mom and now I don't have her. And it's because maybe I was, I don't know, maybe you can relate to these thoughts, that maybe I was so selfish that I had an ulterior motive. I wanted to spend time with her and be fit and to follow my kind of lifestyle.
There was good intentions.
Yes,
but absolutely. How do you move on from something like that? It's very difficult.
It is very difficult, and sometimes it takes a lifetime to do so. And I'm sure you will have other experiences in life that will help you process this in a different way. A new way to shed a new light and look at things from a different perspective. You have your own daughter as well. She will grow up. You will become a grandma. You know, life is not over. When we experience someone's death, to a certain extent, it kind of is over. We're like, things stop in time. But there will be something that will help you kind of jumpstart, like, your life again, and then be able to move forward. It's very tough. I relate.
We feel so much for you. But we thank you so much, Ella, for sharing your story. We appreciate
it. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you. All the best to you. 4001 or the app. It's just so difficult. It's really difficult. But it, like you said, life does go on. It continues, and we do try to find, because that's the optimism of life, that you do look for joy in other places, and you will find memories of that loved one that passed away in joy in other places.
The one exercise that I do with clients who come in for grief counseling is I ask them to write a letter to the loved one that they have lost. And in these letters are so moving. They're so genuine and authentic. And part of the grief counseling is, you know, these letters help them get over so much of their guilt, so much of their regret, and they feel that they can connect with that person on a whole different level.
Mm. We actually have another caller on the line. We've got Zelda. Hello, Zelda.
Hi, this is Zelda. I'm sorry, I'm at school, so it's really busy around me.
No worries. We can hear you loud and clear. Go ahead.
Okay, so I went through a health scare myself, and I just want to tell the ladies out there that sometimes we make life difficult for ourselves. And I think we need to take a step back and look what is important. So when I had the health scare, I immediately started to do like a healthy living lifestyle. Mm-hmm. That means health, beauty, fitness, everything. And then I started a club. And I would like to encourage all the ladies just to, even if it's in your community, just start something that will build you up. So that's a piece of advice.
Yes, this is what usually happens. We have a health scare and we start questioning, what have I done? Why am I not looking after myself? Okay, I've given everything to my kids, to my parents, to my husband, to my work. Now it's time to stop and look at myself. And usually it's after a health scare, because it kind of reminds us of the, you know, that life is fleeting.
It's one of the first things that goes, isn't it, Zelda? And it's one of the last things that we pay attention to when we're when your body is in trouble and it's just saying, I can't handle this anymore. And you've got to go into a healthier direction. I think we're all guilty of that, aren't we?
That's true. So what I've done is, it's a non-profit thing that I'm doing. But, for instance, this morning I was walking around the Obasha Lake Pond, and I invite on my social media a lot of ladies to walk with me because there's so many that stay at home. They are too afraid to go out and do an exercise by themselves. But when, you know, when they are surrounded by other ladies, they feel more comfortable. So it's actually a two-in-one. You exercise and you social and you feel good. You know, it's actually a three-in-one, if you can say that. So, yeah, it's something that I do for myself, and I also do it for the others that I care about.
Brilliant stuff, Zelda. It's exciting. It's great. It gets you all together and gets you out and exploring the world together, doesn't it?
Yes.
Thank you so much. Thanks for sharing your story, Zelda. 044-23-1010 is the number. But that, you know, that's really how you get yourself out of a rut, isn't it, Sabine, in terms of getting out there with new people, going for a walk.
We are creatures of connection.
Yeah. And so we've got to find that way. And sometimes we lose it. We're at home all the time with the kids. Get out there and meet some new people. Yeah, interesting. That's what we're discussing today. Sabine Scaff, clinical psychologist, is here to answer your questions. We've only got a few more minutes left with her. What's your biggest regret? What would you tell your younger self? The topic that's taken us real deep today. We're talking about regrets, and lots of your text messages coming in on 4001 and on the app. Don, you texted in earlier when I shared the story about my dad passing away, and you said, I don't know why it's really touched me, and my dad's 67th birthday was yesterday, and we're not close lately. And when I called to wish him happy birthday, he said, I want to see you before I die. And I'm stubborn, arrogant. I'm a stubborn, arrogant person. Never took it seriously, but your story made me think otherwise. Thank you. I really hope it does. Just take that time, reconnect with your dad, put the past aside. It's really not worth it. And make sure you connect with your loved ones, because you never know when it could be too late. You don't want to have that regret. So, I'm really glad that it kind of made you stop and think. Dr. James Pikeway has also texted in saying, makes me think of my dad, lost him years ago. It is very difficult when you have those regrets of particularly that are attached to a loved one that's passed away.
Yes.
And kind of brings us to the whole idea of how regret is linked to depression as well, Ms.
Absolutely. Sabine. Absolutely. I mean, when we lose someone, when we go through the loss cycle, one of the healing stages is depression, and it's a reactional depression. It's not the clinical depression that you experience without a loss. It's very integrated in the grieving cycle, and it's a healthy sign that you are processing. But depression can take many different forms in many different people, depending on their personality. If we go back to the previous caller who spoke about her health scare, so when our mind sends us red flags, signals, warning signs that you're not coping well, you're about to be burnt out, you're spreading yourself too thin, and we choose to ignore it because we are convinced that we are Wonder Women and we can do everything, right? So it's our body that starts talking to us
first,
you know, metaphorically, and it's our bodies that take on to relay the message, like, you really need to stop now and to take care of yourself.
Mm.
How many of us have ended up in the emergency room doing unnecessary medical exams, or necessary, but that turn out, and the doctor looks at you and says, there's nothing wrong with you, it's stress. You know, I hear this from so many of the clients, of my colleagues, of my friends.
As if it's just nothing, as if stress is nothing.
No, stress is everything.
Well, that's what I mean. You
but
know.
It goes into your body when you don't process it emotionally, psychologically, mentally. It's your body that suffers, and it this is where, because we see it, it's tangible, this is when we decide to stop. If it's not tangible, again, with the stigma of mental health, like, it's fine, I can deal with it. I don't want to look vulnerable or weak, you know? So until you reach a point where you collapse, something's got to give, like you said at the beginning of the show.
Don't wait for that point.
No.
But I think we've got to end off on a positive note.
Please.
That we can get over this. We shouldn't be sweating the small stuff. In just a moment, we're going to be hearing from those of, I think, really the best age. They're in the age of the youngest, the littlest ones, ages 5 and up, about what they regret. But I want to thank you first, Sabine.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you so much. It's been an enlightening hour.
It's 2 hours, in fact, to be with here.
So thank you for sharing that. And thank you to everybody who has texted in. But I'm going to leave you with this.
I went to the playground and I want to go again today. I wish I had never met that mean girl.
I do wish I was still in ice skating class.
Teasing my sister because she sometimes hits me.
Getting angry at my family sometimes.
One time by accident, I kicked someone.
Nothing.
I can't think of anything. I got no regrets.
Not spending more time with my oldest brother before he went to college.
Probably not trying as hard and when I was younger with grades.
Getting in a huge fight with my best friend since I was 2 years old.
Not being more open to things.
Not letting my grandmother know how much I loved her.
I regret going to an acting conservatory my senior year of high school.
I regret taking myself too seriously when I was in high school.
I don't.
Not taking chances.
When my aunt died, I wasn't there, and she was a really important part of my life.
Not thinking before I speak more frequently in my day-to-day life.
Not getting to know my father more before he died.
I wish I knew what I really wanted to do earlier.
Not getting into computer science at an earlier age.
Having a better relationship with my family as a teenager.
Not taking school as seriously as I should have.
My parents got me tickets for Christmas to see Sweeney Todd. I denied the tickets and my best friend went with another friend. I kind of regret that. I should have seen that musical.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.